If we know the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Our Town by Thornton Wilder, we realize that it's set in a New England town that Wilder calls Grover's Corners, where the residents move through their everyday lives. But, as we learn, they do so under the aspect of eternity. Winfield Townley Scott suggests that as Our Town begins, Wilder sets in motion the little wheel of daily doings, and that this is the only wheel there is in many plays and fiction. But as this play proceeds, Wilder sets in counter motion to the little wheel, a big wheel. Scott feels this double vision, this interweaving, is what he calls the music of the play. He says the combination admits stars and people, universe and small town, eternity and time, the sense of wonder and the commonplace. This is the music of the play. By the end of Act One, its harmonies and its dissonances are interweaving with authoritative power. It beats with the great silence of the moonlight on the streets and gardens of Grover's Corners, on the ladies dispersing from choir practice, on the heliotrope as the doctor and Mrs. Gibbs walk in the yard before retiring, on the weaving progress of drunken Simon Stimson, and on Mr. Webb chatting with Constable Warren, making his rounds. "Blessed be the tie that binds" is the hymn, which, like the ring of the moon, encircles this people. Finally, wistful diminuendo and frank statement of the interwoven tones modulate the conversation of the Gibbs children in the upper window, when Rebecca describes the address on a letter to Jane Crowfoot. Jane Crowfoot, the Crowfoot Farm, Grover's Corners, Sutton County, New Hampshire, United States of America, continent of North America, Western Hemisphere, the Earth, the Solar System, the Universe, the mind of God. "And the postman brought it just the same," said Rebecca. "What do you know?" George exclaims. So again, little wheel and bigger wheel in Our Town. In the afterword to his play, Underneath the Lintel, Glenn Berger muses about life, life with a capital L, and he too begins with the mundane, the everyday. He writes, "A spot of grocery shopping, a few diapers changed, dinner, a chat on the phone, a shower, a shave, and an arduous mission retrieving a small round dog toy from under the couch. That has been my day today, and all in all, little to write home about, certainly nothing demanding deep consideration, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing strange. That is, if it weren't for three incontrovertible facts. 1. The universe contains well over 500 billion galaxies, with each galaxy containing over 1 trillion stars, of which our vast, blazing, and life-bestowing sun is one. 2. The Earth is over 4 billion years old, in which time from the Precambrian era to the present, a dizzying, terrifying number of inhabitants, amoebas and trilobites, dust mites and Neanderthals, have all struggled to live from 1 hour to the next. And, 3, I will die. I will be dead in 60 years, though it's entirely conceivable that I'll be dead before the week is out. These are 3 simple facts, 3 confirmed and undeniable facts. The immensity of the universe, the incomprehensibly vast history of the Earth, and our inescapable mortality. They loom over all of us like 3 paisley mastodons. When I shine these 3 facts upon any moment in my life, suddenly nothing, absolutely nothing, isn't strange, bewildering, and out of all whooping. And with Emily Gibbs in Our Town, he notes that these facts loom so large, in fact, that they are rather easily ignored. Berger goes on to explain, I write plays to help me keep these three facts in the front of my head. In other words, I write to try to keep myself engaged with the bewildering and infinite. But why did I write Underneath the Lintel in particular? All my plays are first inspired by music, and Underneath the Lintel was inspired particularly by certain klezmer, Yiddish music from the 1920s and earlier. The jaunty melancholy, the dancing despite it all quality it contained, the defiance, even a certain finding joy despite all the evidence to the contrary quality in this music, compelled me to try to express it as a play. Words of Glenn Berger in the afterword to his play, Under the Lintel. Thomas Putnam, artistic director of Hamilton Gibson Productions in Wellsboro, is drawn to the power of this play, so much so that he is acting in it and directing it at the Warehouse Theater this weekend and next. We had a chance to speak by phone with Thomas about Under the Lintel and its run at Hamilton Gibson.
We're a community theater located in Tioga County, and we've been in existence since 1991. We started out just with a group of people who wanted to offer opportunities for people in the area to be able to be in the theatrical production. And that summer we did two productions, and it's grown from there. So we started out in the back of a farm implement garage midway between Wellsboro and Mansfield, and now we're primarily located in the Dean Center of Performing Arts, which is right in Wellsboro. And we offer between 6 and 8 main stage productions each year. We have a lot of programming for children, a children's choir, and summer camps, and workshops, and so forth. So we're pretty busy for this small little town here of less than 3,000. But we draw from people all over the county and beyond. Actors come from, we've had some people from Corning and Elmira and almost at Bath and Williamsport. And so people come from all over to be involved.
And you have been involved for so long, Thomas, and you have made this a very important part of your life. What is it about theater that you see as so important for yourself?
I think I've always loved theater. I can remember my first professional play the first play that I remember seeing, which was the touring company of The Sound of Music with Florence Henderson. And I remember during intermission telling my dad I just didn't want it to end. And I think that on and off then through my school years, I was interested in theater, then got away from it for a while and got a degree in education and taught for a number of years. But there's something about theater that kept drawing me, and I just keep coming back. I know that people get tired perhaps of me saying it, but I loved the character of Atticus Finch, both in the book and in the play. Actually, I was able to play him once in a play. And his comment that you can't really get to know anyone until you've crawled around in their skin for a while. And that is what theater is able to do. And so we want to provide opportunities for people to crawl around in some other people's skin for a while, because that develops empathy. That helps us to broaden our own perspective. And we so often, it's so easy to just get trapped into our own little vision of what life should be or what situations should be or how to approach things. And theater, I think, really helps both being in a play and actually acting in it, but also for the audience to have that time to begin to see things from other people's point of view, which we desperately need these days.
This is an intriguing title, and this is something that we ask you about from time to time, Thomas, about the choice of pieces that you all will do in the course of your season. How about this one?
Well, this is our 35th season, and when we were exploring the season, which was about 2 years ago, we start planning about 2 years in advance, we wanted to do something We thought about bringing back some shows that we have done in the past just to kind of celebrate this milestone, 35. And so we brought back Annie. We did that musical this summer. And we actually did Underneath the Lintel. I did it in 2008 and was the first time I did it, actually. And then when we opened a little theater, the Dean Center opened a little space called the Warehouse Theater. There are two different venues in the Dean Center. One of them, the smaller one, is called the Warehouse Theater. And so we decided for that opening that I would do Underneath the Lintel then. So this is one that we brought back for our celebration here of our birthday. But why we chose that one, I don't know, maybe perhaps because, well, I'm getting older, so I don't know how many more years I'd be able to do a one-man play. And it's a fascinating play, and it's really interesting because nobody on the board and nobody on our artistic planning committee, which is the group that decides on the season, nobody had seen it the first time, and nobody on the board had seen it. So it was like a new play for all of them as well. And when they read the script, they thought that would be a good choice for us this year.
And it must speak to you. You would have vetoed it if you hadn't wanted to do it again. But to the degree that you can tell us, what is it that speaks to you and you think will speak to audiences?
Yeah. Well, and you're right. I definitely wouldn't have agreed or been at all interested if it weren't such a fascinating play. And for me, I've never been able to memorize very easily, but to go through this play and worked on it now for the last couple of months, it's so wonderful to be able to see things from a perspective. You know, I've lived now how many years since then, and so my perspective has changed on a lot of things, and I'm seeing things that I never saw when I did it the first time. And it's so layered and so rich and so full of surprises that I said, yeah, I definitely want to do this again. And I love the character. He's a Dutch librarian, an old Dutch librarian, and he discovers his job in the library. He's in Holland, and his job is to check in the books that come in overnight through the overnight slot. And that's basically his whole job. He lives alone. He's not married, no children. He keeps to himself. And one day he finds a book in the overnight slot that had been checked out 113 years previous. And he's floored. And, of course, he's completely appalled because that overnight slot is strictly for books that are not overdue. And how could anybody dare to turn in a book that's overdue in that slot? And he becomes intrigued with who could this possibly be. And the person, he checks the files, and the person just signed it out with a capital letter A, period. And that's it. That's the only information they have. They do have a post office box, however, but the post office box happens to be, he discovers, in China. And so he can't quit thinking about this book and who could possibly have checked it out and then returned it 113 years later. And so the whole play is his journey, his search for this mysterious person who would have done such a thing. And it takes him all over the world and way back in time. It's not time travel, but the mystery involves things that have happened centuries ago. And he's just a charming, self-deprecating old guy, and I think audiences will really connect with him. And the wonderful thing about this one-man play, I did one other one-man play a number of years ago called Every Brilliant Thing, which also completely eliminates the fourth wall between the stage and the audience. And I love that. And it is presented as a lecture that he is talking to the audience to, as he says at the beginning, to prove one life and to justify another. And so he has all of these little, what he calls, evidences in this mystery that he begins to unfold, and he tells us his search for this mysterious person, step by step. And he goes, and as he explains the evidence it's as if he's discovering it for the first time. So it's kind of in and out, and the audience, I think, does really buy into it very quickly. And I mean, at times he walks right out toward the audience and is talking, well, the whole time he's talking right to them. The tension that is required in most plays that happens between characters, since there is no other character, it's between the librarian and the audience. And so he needs the audience. That's the tension there, and as he's trying to convince them of his search.
That's a very specific time. 113 years is specific. Do we know what time this is taking place?
Well, the book was returned in 1986. The play was actually written in 2000, was going to be first performed 2001, the week of 9/11, which is a fascinating whole story in itself. So the playwright, Glenn Berger, said it that the book was returned in 1986, but his search has gone on, so it takes place right today. I mean, he's talking to the audience the night of the performance. But there are some very specific things throughout, very specific tragedies that have happened in the world, like a flood in China and when a certain Zulu warrior was born. And he's very specific. He's very clear, and he's got all of these evidences labeled with a number, and he knows the exact date. And he often refers to his little stamper, you know, that a librarian has to stamp the card in the back of the book, and he carries it around with his neck. And so at one point, he just rotates it and at random, and then he will look at it and then explain to the audience what happened on that particular date. And he so embraces this lovely thing that he has. And he, at one point, he says that, you know, the history of mankind is in his hand as he holds this stamper. And so it's very specific in terms of time and place.
And is the book on stage with you? Do you hold it and show us the book?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's evidence number one. And it's a Baedeker's travel guide. You know, that Baedeker's had travel guides for years and decades and decades. And it's a Baedeker's travel guide that we found. We wanted an old one, and so we found one actually in Stratford, Canada, at a used book bookstore. We take Hamilda Gibson takes a bus trip to Canada, to the Stratford Festival, every fall. And so when we first did it way back in 2008, we looked for there, and we found one, and it's perfect. I mean, it's a great prop, and we kept it all this time since we did it.
Now, is there some underlying theme or some sense we have about reading in our lives?
It's not so much about reading, and I mean, it's this huge transformation for this guy because he is so alone and I think quite lonely. And his life, he has never left Holland before. And he has rarely left the little town that he's from, Hoofddorp, only has left that once. He's right there. And yet this discovery and fascination with who this possibly could be gets him out of his, I mean, to say out of his comfort zone is a understatement. I mean, he begins to start traveling, and he's amazed at how much he's learning, and he does end up going all over the place and doing things that he would never dream of doing. And that's the title, Underneath the Lintel. The lintel is the top of a door frame. And so he uses, there are a couple of times where he refers to a decision that was made underneath the lintel. And he uses that as kind of just the symbol or the place where we all stand, the playwright says in his afterword, we all stand there every day making decisions. We have no idea what the consequences might be. Some of our decisions are, you know, have no, they're completely inconsequential. Others change our whole lives, and oftentimes the lives around us, and far-reaching. And so there are a couple of times in the play where he and this mysterious character have made decisions that are hugely consequential. So it's as he begins to find out more about this mysterious man, and these clues keep leading him closer and closer, then his life becomes richer and richer and broader and broader, and it's like he's being freed from either the self-constraints or the strains that society might have put upon him.
It sounds like this play is a wonderful example of the power of theater, because it's an actor and a prop or so, and you are taking us along the journey with the character you play, and it's not a lot of flash and dash and wind machines and things like that. It's the actor and the script and the audience for the most part.
That's right. And the suggestion is that the playwright suggests that perhaps this librarian has rented a rundown theater or space in a rundown part of town, and he's giving this, or it might be in a theater that is between shows, so there's no real set on the stage, and it's kind of dingy, and there might only be five or six people in the audience, and he's trying to convince these five or six. So when people walk in to the Warehouse Theater, they may think, well, what happened here? Because it doesn't look like there's any set, but that's what it should look like. And it is. I think that the audience buys into it very quickly and is very eager to get swept away in this journey. And it is amazing, at least in my mind, as I'm doing it, in my mind, that you're traveling all over the place. And he does use this old-fashioned slide machine where that he has some slides that he has put together. So every now and then he'll show a slide on this, sheet hanging up on the back of the stage wall. And so he refers to that, and then he's got all these little clues that he keeps pulling out of this battered old suitcase. But he's such a great storyteller. And, I think that's what theater's all about, is telling stories. And we need stories, and stories change us. Stories are what we're all about, I think. We need to tell our story. We need to hear other people's stories.
Well, tell us how we can see it, Thomas.
Well, the dates are, it opens up on September 26th, Friday night, and runs the 26th, 27th at 7:30, and on Sunday at 2:30, and then the same pattern that first weekend in October. And you can get tickets at hgp.booktix, that's booktix.com. And just a warning, we can't allow anybody in after the show starts, so make sure that you get there in plenty of time. It's general seating, so you pick your own seat. It's a very small theater, holds about 85 people. And so, yeah, the best way is just to get online and do that.
Any closing thoughts as you are getting closer to opening?
I love the process of putting on a play. I mean, I really love directing, and I love that whole process of just seeing it come alive. So this is different because I'm directing it myself, although I've had some people who have been helping me with the lines and just hearing it, certain sections, and I bounce ideas off of them. So I'm really eager to now, the play isn't complete at all unless we've got an audience, so I'm looking forward to that. But I do want to say that the playwright, Glenn Berger, said that all of his plays are inspired by music, and this one was inspired by klezmer music, Yiddish music from the 1920s. And, what he describes as this music embracing a jaunty melancholy, or the dancing despite it all quality that it contained, the defiance even, a certain finding joy despite all the evidence to the contrary quality in the music. That's what compelled him to write the play. And over in the play, the librarian says, "We will proceed. We shall proceed." And it's just this finding joy despite all the evidence. You just keep going. And so I think that people will find it a joyful, charming, encouraging, it's about an hour and a half, and just come away with it dancing to some klezmer music.
Thomas Putnam, Artistic Director of Hamilton Gibson Productions in Wellsboro, and actor in and director of the one-person show Underneath the Lintel by Glenn Berger, opening tonight at the Warehouse Theater, Central Avenue in Wellsboro, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., Sundays at 2:30, and that's through October 5th. For more information, on the web, HamiltonGibson.org, HamiltonGibson.org. Underneath the Lintel, presented by Hamilton Gibson Productions. And that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, this weekend and next, 7:30 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, 2:30 matinees Sundays, the 28th and 5th, at the Warehouse Theater, 3 Central Avenue in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. For more information, HamiltonGibson.org.